ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 7, Schedule of Incarnations, Text Number 3. Chagye chakardam grihe dvijadeva hutyam. Stribik samam navabiratma gatim svamatre. Ucheya yatma shamalam guna sanga pangam. Asmin vidhuya kapilasya gatim prapede. Jagye chakardama grihe dvijadeva hutya. Stribik samam. Navadiratmagatim svamatre. Ucheya yatma shamalam guna sanga pangam. Asmin vidhuya kapilasya gatim prapede. Jagye chakardama grihe dvijadeva hutya. Stribhik saman navabiratmagatim svamatre. Ucheya yatma shamalam guna sanga panka. Asmin vidhuya kapilasya gatim prapede.
Asmin vidhuya kapilasya gatim prapede.
Jagye.
Jagye.
Two birds.
Cha.
Also.
Kardama.
The Prajapati named Kardama.
Grihe.
In the house of.
Dvija
O Brahmana. Devahutyam. In the womb of Devahuti. Stribhi. By women. Samam. Accompanied by. Navadi. By nine. Atmagatim.
Spiritual realization.
Svamatre, unto his own mother. Uche, uttered. Yasya, by which? Atmashamalam, coverings of the spirit soul. Gunasanga, associated with the modes of nature. Pankam, mud.
Asmin.
This very life.
Vidhuya.
Being washed off.
Kapilasya.
Of Lord Kapila.
Gatim.
Liberation.
Prapede.
Achieved.
Achieved.
Translation. The Lord then appeared as the Kapila incarnation, being the son of Prajapati Brahmana Kardama and his wife, Devahuti. Along with nine other women, sisters, he spoke to his mother about the self-realization by which, in that very lifetime, she became fully cleansed of the mud of the material modes and thereby achieved liberation, the path of Kapila. Purport. The instructions of Lord Kapila to his mother Devahuti are fully described in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And anyone who follows the instructions can achieve the same liberation obtained by Devahuti. The Lord spoke Bhagavad Gita, and thereby Arjuna achieved self-realization. And when even today anyone who follows the path of Arjuna can also attain the same benefit as Sri Arjuna. The scriptures are meant for this purpose. Foolish, unintelligent persons make their own interpretations by imagination and thus mislead their followers, causing them to remain in the dungeon of this material existence. However, simply by following the instructions imparted by the Lord Krishna or Lord Kapila, one can obtain the highest benefit, even today. The word Atmagatim is significant in a sense of perfect knowledge of the Supreme. One should not be satisfied simply by knowing the qualitative equality of the Lord and the living being. One should know the Lord as much as can be known by our limited knowledge. It is impossible for the Lord to be known perfectly as He is, even by such liberated persons as Shiva or Brahma. What to speak of other demigods or men of this world? Still, by following the principles of the great devotees and the instructions available in the scriptures, one can know to a considerable extent the features of the Lord. His Lordship Kapila, the incarnation of the Lord, instructed his mother fully about the personal form of the Lord. And thereby she realized the personal form of the Lord and was able to achieve a place in the Vaikuntha Loka where Lord Kapila predominates. Every incarnation of the Lord has his own abode in the spiritual sky. Therefore, Lord Kapila also has his separate Vaikuntha planet. The spiritual sky is not void. There are innumerable Vaikuntha planets. And in each of them, the Lord, by his innumerable expansions, predominates. And the pure devotees who are there also live in the same style as the Lord and his eternal associates. When the Lord descends personally or by his personal planetary expansions, such as incarnations are called Amsha, Kala, Guna, Yuga, and Manvantara avatars. And when the Lord associates, Lord's associates descend by the order of the Lord, such incarnations are called Shakti Avesha incarnations. But in all the cases, all incarnations are supported by the invulnerable statements of the authorized scriptures and not by imagination of some self-interested propagandist. Such incarnations of the Lord, in either of the above categories, always declare the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be the ultimate truth. The impersonal conception of the Supreme Truth is just a process of negation of the form of the Lord from the mundane conception of the Supreme Truth. The living entities by their constitution are spiritually as good as the Lord, and the only difference between them is that the Lord is always supreme and pure without contamination by the modes of material nature, whereas the living entities are apt to be contaminated by association with the material modes of goodness, passion and ignorance. This contamination by the material modes can be washed off completely by the knowledge, renunciation and devotional service. Devotional service to the Lord is the ultimate issue, and therefore those who are directly engaged in devotional service of the Lord not only acquire the necessary knowledge of the spiritual science, but also attain detachment from material connection, and thus promoted to the kingdom of God by complete liberation, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 14:26. Mam chayo vyavicharinam bhakti yogina sevate sagunam samadityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Even in the non-liberated stage, a living entity can be directly engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, or his plenary expansions like Rama or Narasimha. Thus, with the proportionate improvement of such transcendental devotional service, the devotee makes definite progress toward Brahmagatim or Atmagatim, and ultimately attains Kapilasya Gatim, or the abode of the Lord, without difficulty. The antiseptic potency of the devotional service to the Lord is so great that it can neutralize the material infection even in the present life of a devotee. A devotee does not need to wait for the next life for complete liberation. Jage chakardam grihe dvijadeva hutyam sri virsamam navadir atmagatim samatre ucheya yatma shamalam gunas sanga pankam asmin vidhuya kapilasya gatim tapede. The Lord then appeared as the Kapila incarnation, being the son of Prajapati, Brahmana Kardama, and his wife Devahuti, along with 9 other women, sisters. He spoke to his mother about self-realization by which, in that very lifetime, she became fully cleansed of the mud of material molds and thereby achieved liberation, the path of Kapila. So here, Brahma is describing how by following the instructions of Lord Kapila, Devahuti first achieved Atmagati, which is self-realization, which is the realization of one's spiritual nature. And then ultimately, in the ultimate issue, when she was completely cleansed from all the contaminations which are there in the heart of the living entity, which is inevitable because of our close association with the modes of material nature. And these modes of material nature are a constant source of mud, contamination. So after that, after achieving this Atmagatim, after some time, in the gradual process of self-realization, she achieved Kapilasyagatim, which is the highest realization of the spiritual world, when she realized the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the person. And this is a gradual process, and Prabhupada stresses here that for that, you have to follow very strictly the scriptures. This is the incarnation of Lord Kapila who gives knowledge. And in some incarnations of the Lord, he gives knowledge. Not in every. In some incarnations, he doesn't give any knowledge. In some incarnations, he just plays. Like Varahadev. He just plays in the mud. You know, kills Hiranyaksha. And in many incarnations, he doesn't give any knowledge. But in this particular incarnation of Lord Kapila there, as well as in the incarnation of Krishna, he gives a particular knowledge which actually brings about the liberation. The liberation is coming through this process of obtaining knowledge. And the knowledge which Krishna gives and which Lord Kapila gives follows the same progression. If we look in the Bhagavad Gita, the instructions of Lord Krishna to Arjuna, we will see that initially he will not even speak about God. He will not even mention the name God. He will not say Ishvara. He will not say anything about God. He will say you're just tiny, smallest spiritual spark. And you cannot be killed. This you have to understand first. And before we understand this, how tiny, small we are, that we are a little spiritual spark, we will never be able to go further. This is a very essential thing. And this is not a very simple thing. You know, sometimes we think that, you know, I have heard this so many times. I know, I'm spirit soul. Yes, great. But when it comes to act, we're acting as if we're body. We have heard so many times, I'm not this body, I'm not this body. Here, it is stressed that first you have to achieve this realization of Atmagati. And who is Atma? Atma is this 1/10,000 of the tip of the hair. And it's a very painful realization. Actually, in this life we are programmed only to know, to realize something which is pleasant. The life is meant for pleasure, right? And therefore, whatever we are doing for pleasure. And to realize that we are 1/10,000th part of the tip of the hair is not a very pleasurable thing. It's a painful thing, you know. Can you imagine you take the hair and little tip you there and you cut it into hundreds of times. You imagine, right? And then you take 1/100th of this and again cut it into hundreds of times. And that's you, right? And that's me. It's painful because we want to be big. I remember when for the first time somebody preached to me, my friend, and he started talking to me that there is God and he's so great, you know, and he's very great. And I said, how great he is. He said, you know, look, this is the ant and this is you. So how much smaller the ant is than you? And I looked at the ant and the ant was small and I was big. And I said, yeah. He said, so the Lord is much bigger than this proportion. This proportion is nothing. The Lord, in comparison with you, is much bigger. And in the leisure time, I started thinking about it, and I couldn't imagine this. I said, no, it's not possible. Maybe this proportion, ant and me,
maybe somebody who is greater than me as much as I am greater than the end, but not more than this. So this is the problem which we all encounter. And therefore, this realization, I am not this body, is not so easy to be achieved. It's not easily achieved. It's a very painful realization. And therefore, the first lesson which one has to learn in order to achieve this realization is the lesson of humility. Unless you become humble, unless you become utterly humble, unless you become totally, you know, crushed into the dust, you will never be able to understand that you are not this body, not to speak about the Lord. Because realization of the Lord requires much more greater humility. You know, even to learn something, to learn anything, you have to be humble. This is a very essential problem in all educations. Because unless you become humble, you will never be able to understand anything. In Vedic system of education, children, when they're taught, the first lesson which they have to know is this lesson of humility. And how they're taught, you know, that first they have to bow down to Guru. The Guru is teaching them. And it doesn't matter, it may be a mundane Guru. It may be a Guru who is teaching them arithmetics. You know, it doesn't matter. But still, the children have to bow down to him, and then they have to pronounce their names, and they have to do it like this. You know, there is a special, the very special significance of this. You try it. You take like this, please. It makes you humble. No, you keep your ears. And in this situation you say, I am this and this, and I am such and such rascal, and I'm going back to you. This is the sign of utter humility, you know. This is what it is. And actually, what you're trying to show by this is that I am ready to hear. Because to achieve knowledge, to obtain knowledge, any knowledge, you have to be ready to hear. And for that, the preliminary qualification is this humility. There is a story from Akbar's time. Akbar was the greatest emperor. He was the Mughal emperor. He was a very generous person, very nice person actually. Also, he was a Muslim, but he was favorably inclined towards spiritual knowledge and was not a bad man. So he was interested in becoming wise. He wanted to get knowledge. He wanted to get wisdom. Therefore, he invited the best sages to his court. And 9 best sages, who were called 9 treasures, were kept there in the court. And they were giving him some advice and this and that. But somehow or other, you know, he has noticed that somehow or other the heart is still the same. The knowledge is not coming in the heart. And he became really angry at this, you know, sages. So at one time he summoned all of them, all the sages, to the court. And he sat on the throne and started chastising them. You useless guys. I invited you, I keep you, I feed you, I give you money, I do everything for you, and you're not teaching me. I'm not becoming wiser. What is this? Even people notice this. You know, you are great sages, but... And the sages, they became very humble, and they, you know, kind of, you know, closed to put down their faces, and they didn't look at him because he was so angry. And one sage, he brought a little son with him, little tiny guy, you know, 5 years old. And when the son heard this, and all the sages became silent, all of a sudden this son started laughing. And it was so obnoxious, you know, in a very challenging way he started laughing. So Akbar, he became even more angry. He started yelling at his son. He said, you know, you stupid child. You son of the sin. Who you think you are? You don't know how to behave in presence of the great king. You don't know what you are doing, you know. Or maybe your father is so clever that there is no speck of intelligence which is left for you. Maybe this is the reason. And anyway, he was chastising this little son. And the son, he very humbly bowed down to the king and he said, oh, please don't be offended. Actually, I'm only laughing because I know the reason why you're not getting any knowledge. And I know the reason why all these sages are keeping silent. And Akbar, he looked at this little guy, you know, and he looked at his face, and the face was bright. And he was so beautiful. So Akbar, he asked the son, "You know this?" He said, "Yes, I know this. Can you tell me?" He said, "Yes, I can tell you. Can you?" And then Akbar looked at him and he said, "Maybe you can teach me." And the son said, "Yes, I can teach you. If you want, I can teach you. If you want knowledge, said, no problem, I can teach you." And Akbar said, "Yes, you teach me." And then the son said, "But first, I have to sit on the throne and you have to sit at my leg, at my feet. That's the proper position of the disciple. If you want me to teach, I will teach you. But let's change the places." And Akbar, you know, because he was so moved by this child, he was so amused and, you know, amazed. He kind of, you know, he stepped down and he sat on the floor. And the child sat on the throne. And the child said, "So, what do you want to know? Ask me. I will tell you." And Akbar, he said like this, "Thank you very much. I already know everything. Because you taught me the very important lesson. Now I know what you mean. Why I didn't get any knowledge. I immediately felt enlightened just by sitting at your feet." He touched his feet and he put the dust of his feet in his head. So that's the very first lesson which one has to understand. Because sometimes the devotees, they tend to be so theoretical. We know so many verses of Bhagavad Gita, you know, this and that, you know, the hinasmin yathadehe kumaram yavam jarapa. You know, when it comes to act, we again act as a proud fools. Because we didn't learn any knowledge. And the knowledge is not coming only because this first lesson is not learned properly. And the first lesson is this, being humble. Because without humility, whatever you do only make you more proud. You may do so many things. You may chant mantras, you may go this, you may distribute books, you may do some austerities, but it will all make you more proud. That's the point. And because you're getting more and more proud, the less and less understanding is coming. Because the first understanding and the real understanding is only coming when you're humble. Like Devahuti, when she approached Lord Kapiladev, she approached Lord Kapiladev in this utter state of humility. She started crying. She said, "Oh my Lord, I know I'm the wife of the great sage, I'm the mother of the great sage, and I am here, but still I'm suffering because of the false ego. And because of the false ego, I'm undergoing all these sufferings, and unless this false ego is destroyed utterly, we will not be able to understand anything." And Devahuti was crying and crying and crying. And she said, "Please teach me something. Tell me something how to get rid of the false ego. Because when the false ego is there, you will manage to enjoy this material life in the hellish condition." This is actually teachings of Lord Kapila. In the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Kapila said that this is amazing. He's teaching his mother. This is amazing, he said. You know, the spirit soul is placed in the hell. And somehow or other, he manages to enjoy in the hell. Now, did you notice this? You can enjoy in any situation. You can be put in prison. You know, people go in prison, and then after some time, they find it quite nice. You know? There is some enjoyment there. Because of the false ego. The false ego is a genius arrangement by the Lord, which gives you the opportunity to enjoy in any situation. So unless you destroy this false ego completely, you will never be able to understand. Moreover, you will do spiritual practices. And that's the problem. That's the trap on a spiritual path. On a spiritual path, when we do something, then again, because of this false ego, because the false ego is not destroyed preliminarily, you tend to be proud by everything which you do. And you become more and more proud. You're proud by the knowledge, you know, you chant this sloka and that sloka and this sloka and that sloka. And your heart is still empty. Even though you know so many slokas. Even though you perform so much austerities. So the first lesson is this, to, you know, all the other lessons which are there on the spiritual path, you have to do. So many things you have to do. You have to be austere. You have to be generous. You have to give donations. You have to do this. But this you can only do if you destroyed your vanity, which is there in the heart. The vanity has to be destroyed. The arrogance, this pride has to be smashed. Or at least we have to try it all the time. And then when this realization is coming, this is Atmagatim. And Atmagatim means you realize your own Atma, you realize how tiny you are. And when you realize this, you're happy. This is actually the first sign of realization. You become totally happy. Lord Krishna is teaching this to Arjuna. Arjuna is also actually in the same situation. Lord Krishna is only teaching Arjuna. Lord Krishna only agreed to teach Arjuna when he saw how humble Arjuna was. And before that, he didn't want to teach him. He just looked at Arjuna and he said, "Hey Arjuna, come on, do something." But then Arjuna said, "No, I cannot do anything." He started crying. And he said, "Karpanya dosha pahatam svabhavam prichhamit vam dharma samutachetam." "You tell me what to do, I'm bewildered. I'm useless, I cannot do anything." And Lord Krishna, at that point, he started teaching. At that point, and in this frame of consciousness, you can only understand something. Not before that, but, you know, the sufferings, they usually make people humble. But when we're happy, we tend to be proud, you know, because I made it, I you know, somehow or other, I will show everyone, you know. So this is a very essential lesson which we have to learn first. And when we learn this lesson, then the happiness of Atmagatim, of self-realization, is coming. Because the self-realization, the realizing our small, tiny nature, this is actually a very happy situation. When we're really small and tiny, we are totally happy. Because nobody can hurt us. The first teaching of Krishna to Arjuna is that nobody can kill the soul because it's so small, you know. It's too small to be killed. It's too small to suffer. It's too small to undergo some pain. You know, this realization of our smallness is a very happy realization. There is also a very nice little story in this regard. Because people, they're chasing for happiness. They're trying to achieve happiness. They're trying to get hold of happiness by all means, to grab happiness. But they don't understand that this happiness is easily available to everyone. Just the moment when you realize that you're a small, tiny speck of Krishna, you will become utterly happy. But people are trying to achieve it. So there is a little story. There was a, how you call this, puppy dog or this pussy? Yeah, little dog. You know, and as usually when people are young, they tend to be very foolish and very proud too. So this little dog, this pussy dog, he was, you know, he was running around. Like the little dogs, they're running. And he was running and running and running and running and running. And he was jumping and he was trying to get hold of his tail. He had the tail and he was, and he couldn't get dressed, you know. He was just running and you know, somehow or other, he couldn't find it. The end of the tail. And then the old dog came. And he looked at this little, you know, small guy who's running and trying to catch the end of his own tail. And he said, "What are you doing?" And this little dog said, "Listen, I know philosophy. I studied philosophy very well. And I came to a very significant realization. I know all the kinds of philosophy. So by this study of philosophy, I came to a very significant realization that the dogs have to be happy." "Right?" He said, "Yes, you're correct." And he said, "I also achieved a very secret knowledge that the happiness of the dog is in the tail. So if I catch the tail, I will become utterly happy, and in this way I will fulfill the mission of my life. Because dogs have to be happy." And the old dog, he started laughing. And he said, "You know, I also know some philosophy. And I agree with you, dogs have to be happy. And I also agree with you that the happiness of the dog is in the tail. And like you, I was also trying to catch my tail. But after some time, I realized that my tail is always with me and I don't have to catch it. I don't have to chase the tail outside of me, because it's anyway always with me. So you be happy, no problem. No need to run for this. No need to try to do this. You know, people, they are trying to catch the happiness outside, whereas the happiness is inside. The happiness is there, and this happiness is coming when you understand who you are, not before that. And for that end, Lord Kapila is teaching this, and the teachings of Lord Kapila is very significant, because he says that to understand and to realize all the truths, there is only one essential knowledge. The first teaching of Lord Kapila, the first lesson which Lord Kapila gives in his teachings to his mother Devahuti, when he says, Satam prasangam mama virya samvido, bhavanti hrit karna rasayana katha, tad joshana masva pavargam vartmani, shradara tir bhaktira nukramishati. He said that everything which you have to know, everything which you need to know, and everything which you can realize in this life is only coming through the association with saintly person. Only through sadhus you can become humble. Only through sadhus you can realize the higher levels of knowledge. Only through association with the sadhus you can achieve any wisdom. This is the main and essential teaching of Lord Kapila. And he begins his teaching from this. Only by associating with saintly persons you can feel this happiness which you are entitled to feel. Unless by, you know, some kind of self-proclaimed process, you will never be able to achieve this highest realization. And this is actually what Lord Kapila is teaching. And we are trying to follow the footsteps of the sadhus. Because the sadhus, only by seeing them, only by looking at them, and, you know, listening to them, you will be able to understand what it means to be the soul, to behave as a soul, what it means to be surrendered. Because the teachings is clear. You know, sometimes we have so much knowledge. We know this and that, you know, all kinds of tooth-breaking Sanskrit terms are there, you know, and we are so equipped with these terms. But still, you know, it's not digested. The sadhu sometimes is compared with the fire of digestion. And this fire is necessary. The association with sadhu is necessary to digest the knowledge. You know, we have so much undigested knowledge. You know, sometimes this knowledge is coming from the mouth, but it's not digested. It's like, you know, belching. You're belching with the knowledge. It's still there. You know, it's not. It has not become the part of your nature. And we think, you know, look, I'm preaching now. I'm preaching. But at the same time, you're preaching, and for what you're preaching? You're preaching just to glorify yourself, just to again feed your vanity. You know, you're sitting here, you're speaking something just to impress people. Again, the same trick is there, you know, and it's just belching because the knowledge is not really digested. Like somebody told me a story. There is one devotee. He is working sometimes in the church, and he's working like an organ player, he's a musician. He's just to earn some money, he goes there. And he told me a story that sometimes he listens what the priest is speaking. And he said, you know, he told a story, the priest told a story from his experience. He said that when he was young, he was a helper of one priest. He was working in the church, and the priest gave a, you know, fantastic lecture. Fantastic, you know, sermon was there, you know. He was at his best. You know, he was speaking so brilliantly and people were completely amazed and completely... And then after that, so many people came to him and said, thank you very much, it was so brilliant, so nice, so bright, you know. So much inspiration is there. And then when they left, this priest told this helper of him, who was his disciple or something like this, he was training him to become a priest, he said, you know, don't believe this. When people come to you, and you're speaking, and people coming to you and saying, thank you very much, you know, don't believe this. Because if you would really speak the word of God, people would feel pain in the heart. And they would not come to you, oh, thank you very much, it was so nice. Because actually, you wanted to gratify their senses. And you gratify their senses because you wanted them to gratify your senses. And they are coming and saying, thank you very much, you're so great. You know? And in this way, mutual sense gratification is going on. The process is still on. He said, if you really speak the truth, the people will feel pain in the heart. And they will not come to you, they will just be ashamed. That's how it is, you know, that the science of self-realization is not easy. Krishna says surrender, but it's very difficult to surrender. It's a very difficult process. The process of surrendering one's will means that from now on, I don't have my own will. That's what surrender means. Surrender means, Krishna says, Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam raja. You take shelter of me only. You just take shelter of me. It means you don't have any more your own will. Only will of Krishna is ruling in your life, you know. And you don't have any more this, you know, sense of individual being as an individual sense enjoyer. You are dependent on Krishna totally, completely. You know, and expect and wait when Krishna will manifest some mercy upon you. That's what it means. That's not so easy. Because even if we do service or so-called service, sometimes we think it's service, but it's self-enjoyment. It's just sense gratification. You know, and if somebody comes to us and say, you know, why don't you wash pots? You know, we say, what? Me? Washing pots? Look how great I am. I can't wash pots, you know. This is... Or, you know, somebody says, thank you very much for your service, go somewhere else and serve somewhere else. And we say, no, you know, and we become bitter. But it means that there was no service. That before that, because service means whatever, you know, Krishna wants you, you do. You know, and if Krishna wants you to go some other place, you go to some other place. Service means you're a servant, and you always feel that I'm a servant. That I don't have my own kind of command over my life. That Krishna is there, he is guiding me and he is telling me what I should do. And in every moment of my life I am painfully aware of this, and I'm not trying to cheat myself through this so-called service. That's what it means. That basically, like our acharyas, they explain what sharanagati is, what surrender is. Because the actually, any religion, any real religion which teaches the personal conception of the Lord has to teach this concept of Sharanagati, how to surrender oneself. And the more elaborately it teaches, the more successful the teaching is. Because to understand that the Lord is the person, you have to know what it means to surrender unto Him. So this Sharanagati is the most essential thing. And therefore Lord Chaitanya says, Trinadapi sunichina tarorapi sahishnuna amanina manadana kirtanya sadahari. You can only get this gift of constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord. You can only be or remain in this condition of the constant chanting if you are total Sharanagata, if you are totally surrendered. And for that, you have to be tolerant and you have to be humble. You know, humility means you destroy your false ego. Humility, this practice of humility is the conscious practice of destroying, smashing the false ego. The false ego is there, and it's like Ravana. You know, Ravana has 10 heads. And you cut one head, and, you know, the head is again there. It grows up. In the same way, you know, the false ego, it's like Ravana. You know, you smash it like this. And the false ego is, you know, from another side. And it's all there. Yeah. You're great, yes, yes, yes. You're so great, you're smashing me so nicely, yes, yes, yes. So that's how it is. It's a constant struggle. So humility means you try to destroy your false conception about yourself all the time. And before that, before applying this, you know, and for that, you try to understand what Krishna wants from you. I'm your servant. And it means that, you know, if some suffering is coming, then you say, thank you very much. This is great. You know, this is good, because this is for me the chance to become a little more humble. Or if somebody comes to us and says, you accuses you completely falsely. You have nothing to do with the accusations. And he comes to you and says, and you say, thank you very much for these accusations. This is great. You know, this, the etiquette, Vaishnava etiquette, there is a very essential Vaishnava etiquette. In Vaishnava etiquette, in Vaishnava circles, if somebody comes to you and says to you something that you are wrong, you are not allowed to defend yourself. Because the first initial reaction is that somebody comes to you and says, you're wrong, you're doing wrong. You know, he says, no, I'm right. You know, I am explaining how it is. Because we're always right, right? We're always in our own mind, we're right. But the etiquette is that somebody comes to you and says, you're wrong. He says, yes, I'm wrong. Even if you're right, even if you're 100 times right, you have to say, yes, I'm wrong. And if somebody comes to you and says to you, you're great, you know, thank you very much, you always have, this is also the very strict rule of the etiquette, you always have to say, no, it's not me, it's my spiritual master and this and that. I have nothing to do with this. Because you have to fight with this tendency in the heart, you know, to defend yourself and to glorify yourself and to, you know, to pump up your false ego. The false ego has to be destroyed. And this is the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. He says, you will never be able to chant the holy name unless you achieve this stage of self-surrender and humility. And therefore, the first items of Sharanagati is this Atmanikshepa Karpanye. Karpanye means humility, and Atmanikshepa, you give yourself to the Lord. You don't belong to yourself anymore. You belong to Him. You're His property. He can do whatever He likes with you. This is the first teaching. And then the other teachings of surrender, you completely trust the Lord. You completely rely on the Lord. Whatever the Lord wants from you, you do. This is Rakshishyayati Vishwasut. You don't care about yourself, you know. You're sold animal to the Supreme Lord. And this is also difficult. It's all difficult. The process of self-realization is not easy. So at the same time, you have to try all the time. Try. You accept everything which is favorable for devotional service. You reject everything which is unfavorable for devotional service. You try despite of all these problems, despite all these anattas which are coming up from the heart. And you do this again and again and again. And this is how you achieve this, because Lord Kapila says that when the sage is coming to you, when sadhu is coming to you and he's speaking, By the words of his speech, by the sound of his speech, you achieve little particle of wisdom. You achieve little bit. You start realizing what you have to do. But then you have to practice again and again and again. And in this way, he says, Shraddharatir Bhaktir Anukramishyati. In this way, first Shraddha. And Shraddha means Nishta. Means very fixed faith. Faith which is not, you know, shaking in any circumstances. First, the Shraddha is coming. And this level of Shraddha is that Kirtaniya Sadahari. You always feel that you're chanting the holy name. You know, you don't have any other business in life. You're just chanting the holy name. And this is a very high stage, you know, which is very difficult to attain. But Lord Kapiladev says, Shraddharatir Bhakti Ranukramishati. Then Bhava is coming, Bhakti. Or Rati. Rati is Bhava. The stage when your heart is totally melted. And then Bhakti is coming. This is all coming in a gradual succession, but you know, for that you really have to try. You really have to become humble. You really have to become tolerant and dependent on the mercy of the Lord. And ultimately, you will have to follow everything which Lord wants from you to follow. And if you do this, then the reward is there. There is no doubt about it. The reward is coming. The very endeavor of this is already rewarding, because you will feel tremendous happiness just by doing this. But you know, and the greater reward is coming ahead. But we have to try it. You know? We have to be real. In other words, as a devotee, there are so many tricks which mind has, and which we are trying to employ upon ourselves. You know, to self-deceive ourselves. But, you know, the devotional service is not that easy in one sense. And this is the path of self-realization. And therefore, it is said here that first Devahuti achieved the self-realization of Atmagatim. And then so many layers of dirt is still there. She already realized she is the spirit soul. But it is said here, Guna Sankapankam, Yatma Shamalam. Shamalam means the coverings. So many coverings are still there, starting with the false seeker. And you have to Guna Sangha Pangam, this dirt of the association with the modes of material nature is there. And therefore, you know, it's coming again and again and again. And you have to constantly work on this to achieve the highest plane. And ultimately, you achieve this plane when Kapilasya Gatim, when you know Lord is the person. Because what it means, person? Person means, you know, that he has the will. Person means somebody who has the desire, who wants you to do something. And that's the achievement through this practice of self-surrender, of Sharanagati, which is, you know, not an easy science to do. And it requires the constant work. That's what it is supposed to be. But otherwise, you know, so many ways of deceiving oneself. So many times people who are practicing so-called religion or so-called practitioners of religion, they're just deceiving themselves and deceiving everyone else. They think that they're doing some service, but actually they're just gratifying their own senses under different pretexts, you know, because this is how the false ego works. There is this also little story. I will finish now and will tell the story and finish it. That, you know, when you achieve this state, then only you are real. Before that, you are kind of fake. When you achieve this state of, you know, utter surrender to the Lord, surrender to His will and to His desire. But before that, you know, so much misconceptions can be going on. We also have this different misconceptions sometimes, because we still feel that I'm the doer. So there is a little story, funny story, from Chinese tradition actually. There was a big festival in one city, and the man, there was so much crowd and so much noises there, so the man went to his well and he wanted to get some water from the well, but the well didn't have this, you know, little higher wall around it, and he was trying to get something and he fell in this well, deep in the well, and he started crying and crying and crying, and nobody cared because everyone was, you know, in a very festival mood and they were both celebrating this and that. Nobody heard his desperate cry from the depths of the well. But ultimately one Buddhist monk came, and Buddhists, they practice this Buddhism, they are very ahimsa and this and that, and this man down there in the well, he became so heavy, he said, "Oh yeah, holy man, please save me. I'm suffering here. I'm about to die. Please take me out of the well." And the Buddhist monk looked and he said, "Look, Buddha told us that we are not allowed to get involved in another's karma. See, it's your karma. You must have done something wrong in your life. And that is just the punishment for what you did wrong. And it's a very good chance for you to understand that you did wrong. So you be there, and I'm not allowed to help you anyway. And, you know, you don't cry. Better you don't cry, because by crying you just do more karma. You just try to understand that you are really, you know, you have nothing to do with this, and then it will be okay." The man is, you know, he's crying. You please take me out. Then you preach to me. I'm ready to hear your nice teachings. But you please first take me out. I'm about to die. He said, no, you sit there, I go away. So he went away. And the man is, you know, there in the well, and he's crying again. And again, another monk is coming. And this monk is Shishi Gorni Taikija. This monk is from the Kung Fu tradition, from this great sage Kung Fu who was living there. And he was very, you know, socially minded. And this monk is coming, and this other man is sitting there in the well, and he's saying, "Oh, please help me." He said, "Really, you're there in the well? That's very good." He said, "How is it good?"
He said, yes, because the Kung Fu said that all the belts have to have the walls around them. And now I realize this wisdom of the great sage of the past. So now I will go. It's very good that you're there. You know, you reminded me about this wisdom. So I will go and I will start the movement, and we will go to the government, and we will demand that governments would put all the walls around the wells, and you know, nobody will fall. He said, could you please help me first? He said, no, you sit there, it's no problem, you know. You should be happy that by your bad example, nobody else will fall into the wells, you know, so the walls will be there, we will do it, you know. And the man is... He's hopeless. He said, all these religious people, they just cannot help me. You know, I'm like trying to, you know, and he's just crying there desperately. And then the Christian monk is coming. The Christian priest is coming. And the man sees somebody, and he doesn't even try to cry anymore. He knows, you know, especially somebody in a robe, you know. But the Christian, you know, he takes the rope. He sees somebody is in the well. He takes the rope and he pulls down the rope and he says, you know, take the rope, I will take you out, you know. And the man is so happy. You know. He catches the rope, you know, and he's climbing over the well, you know. He's there out there and he says, thank you very much. You help me. All other, you are the only one religious person, you know, because you have the compassion. Others, they were coming and they were just preaching to me and I couldn't understand anything. And you thank you very much. I will never fall in the wells. I will be so careful. And the Christian monk says, no, you're not right. You're completely bewildered. You know? You please fall down again and again and again. And you teach all your children to fall down in the wells. And then we will save you. We will save you. Because it is said that whoever saves you, he gets to the heaven. You know, we will, you know, otherwise how we will get to the heaven? We have to save you. So you please fall yourself and you teach all your children to fall into the wells. And no problem, we will go on saving you. But it means basically, in all these cases, you know, people that so-called practicing religion, but this selfishness is still there. In the case of this Christian monk, he wants to go to heaven. And, you know, I will save you, but, you know, you please fall down as often as possible so that I could have opportunity to do something. You know, because the false ego is not destroyed. Because this is painful, because this is the where the center of the pain is. And the spiritual life means to destroy the false ego. The essence of the spiritual life is to somehow or other, by the practices which we are doing, by sadhana, that the aim of the sadhana is to destroy the false ego, to destroy the false conception of who I am. And not to cherish it, not to pump it up, not to become more and more puffed up. So that's the process. And when you do this, and because the false ego is the basis of all this Atma Shamalam, the coverings which are around the soul. If you do this, then you first realize Atma Gatim and then Kapilasya Gatim or Krishnasya Gatim, the highest destination of the spiritual world. That's what we are here to do, which is not easy. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shall I finish now? Yeah.
Maharaj, you are speaking about this Sharanagata. Mm-hmm. So there are these six phases. But this utter humility comes like after some first phases. So is it like some other degree of humility or why is it?
See, when the order is like this, anukulyasya sankalpam pratikulyasya varjanam rakshishyaditi vishvaso goptritvevaranam tatham admanikshepa karpanyam. And karpanyam means humility meekness is going last. But when Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining the science of Sharanagati in his book, he starts from this. He starts from Doinya. Because Doinya, which is the synonym, Bengali synonym of Karpanya, humility,
means this regret. You know, if you read Bhaktivinoda Thakur Sharanagati, you will see that the first six or seven songs from this Doinya section, it's just, you know, total, complete regret about the wasted life. And it's so acute, you know. First he says that in the womb, I was praying to you, but then as soon as I came out from the womb, I started wasting my life in this, you know, church pranks. And then I started learning, this is the next song, Vidyara Vilasi. I started this, you know, pastimes of my education, and I was becoming more and more puffed up, then I became the family man. And then he says, Amara Jivanam Sadapatirata Nahika Punyara Lesha. He says that now I'm old, and I'm looking back at my life, and I don't see anything by sins, just which I committed. So when Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining this, he's taking this humility the first as the basis. And he's taking the opposite order. He's taking humility first, that Atmanivedanam second. Atmanivedanam means, basically what it means, if I have 2 minutes, I can explain a little more about Sharanagati. That humility and Atmanivedanam, Karpanya and Atmanivedanam, it means that you're destroying two aspects of your false ego. The first aspect of false ego is I. This is aham. And aham you can only destroy. And aham means I'm what? I'm great, right? I'm this, I'm that, I'm doer. Or sometimes aham can be also I'm sufferer. You know, so many people, they enjoy by presenting themselves how nicely or how beautifully they suffer. You know, such beautiful suffering is there. You know, look, I'm a martyr. So, and the first item of Sharanagati, of surrendering oneself to the Lord, is this, to destroy this principle of aham. Me, I, you know, I'm at the center, everyone else should serve me, and everyone else is, I'm doer, I'm sufferer, I'm this, I'm that. So, and for that, you know, you really look, I'm little insignificant speck, you know, and at the same time, I'm so sinful also, I'm so proud of myself. And I take any opportunity to become proud. And then you have to destroy the second aspect of false ego, which is mama, mine. This belongs to me. I'm this, I'm that, you know, and this is my sphere of influence. This is my area, you know. Don't come here. This is mine. and this is Atmanivedanam. Atmanivedanam, you say, nothing belongs to me, everything belongs to you. I am your dog. I'm dog at your house, and you put me to guard your house, and I'm going to guard your house, and if you want to kick me, that's your right, because I'm your dog. And if you want to give me some remnants from your plate, I'm ready to take it. I will be, you know, whirling my tail and take these remnants. This is Atmanivedanam, how Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining Atmanivedanam. And this is the first practices. And then there are two other practices. Rakshishyayati Vishvaso Goptrite Varanam Tathai. Again, the same thing. Then Rakshishyayati Vishvaso means that now what will happen with me? If I'm not dependent on me, if I'm not only relying on my strengths, then who will protect me? And then you say, Lord will protect me. This is also the practice. When you try to understand that in many situations of my life, the Lord was there. His saving grace was there. He was protecting me. So my I is actually much nicer protected when He is protecting me. When not weak, myself is protecting myself. But when the Lord, mighty Lord, is protecting me. And then Rakshishyayati Vishvaso Goptritve Varanam Tathai. Goptritve Varanam Tathai, it means that, you know, whatever I need, He will give me. I don't need to really, you know, take care of myself, because I don't need really to be overly anxious that I need to have this and that and this and that and something to eat. He will give me to eat. And this is the fourth item of surrender. So it goes in this order. And then anukulyasi sankalpak pratikulyasi varjanam, it means that in order to achieve this, you do whatever is favorable, and you don't do anything which is unfavorable. It means that sometimes people, they have this false conception that surrender means I don't do anything anymore.
Because I'm surrendered, right? You know, I will be sleeping here, and the Lord somehow or other, He will bring some prasadam to me, and I will wake up, eat it, and sleep again. This is surrender, right? No, this is not surrender. This is laziness. Therefore, the next two items is that, but to achieve this, you have to do this. You have to actively apply yourself. And it means you do whatever is good for self-surrender, for devotional service, for your chanting. And you reject anything which is bad. Uncompromisingly reject anything, you know. And this way you practice. And at the same time, you chant the holy name. And in this way, the surrender sometime will come if you practice this. So this is how Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining this Sharanagati process. Okay. Thank you very much. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jāy.